Hi, guys, and welcome to the Moms and Murder podcast. Today with me is me. Mandy couldn't be here today. We are in full-blown Hurricane Irma prep, and Mandy actually had a family emergency this week, so we were not able to record an episode together, but I had recorded one with my sister, Megan, who's wonderful and great and basically better than me, but please don't tell her that. That's who you're going to hear today, a conversation between me and my sister, Megan. And so I hope you guys will enjoy that. We are hoping to be back next Tuesday. So when you're hearing this, this will be post-hurricane. And spoiler alert, Mandy and I did survive. So we're really happy to still be here. But hopefully next Tuesday we'll have a new episode. But it really all depends on electricity and whether or not we actually are going to be the person of interest in the next story. If we lose electricity too long, I really can't be held responsible for anything that I do. So while we're gone in our absence, if we are out for a week, there are some great podcasts for you to check out. Mens Rea, Corpus Delicti, I've got an actual list here, Pretend Radio, Nothing Rhymes with Murder, Just Another Murder Podcast, The Guilty Podcast, California Dreaming, Kiwi Crimes, We're All Pretending is a new one, True Crime Fan Club. I'm forgetting people, and I feel like this is an acceptance speech and somebody's playing the music to get me off. So promos at the end of the show, please check them out. We have one that is another true crime podcast and one that's a true crime-ish podcast. Lots of really cool stories and a great accent. So go for the accent, stay for the stories. Hope you guys enjoy the show, and we will be back with you soon. Thanks. Welcome to the Moms and Murder podcast. Today we have a very special episode with a very special person, one of my favorite people, my sister Megan.
Hi, everyone.
Megan is also a mom and also a fellow true crime enthusiast, mostly because of the upbringing we had with our father and mother, who tried to keep us from watching things like Cops and Unsolved Mysteries. Are there any you remember watching when we were little?
Definitely America's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
I had nightmares. Still have nightmares over those.
Do you remember, was it called Code Red? Or one of those where you would see people swimming to the bottom of the pool, and I still won't swim near a drain in a pool because I'm terrified my hair will be stuck at the bottom. Or I want to swim with like scissors next to the pool.
I do swim with scissors all the time.
So I feel like that's like running with scissors and a really terrible idea to do. So don't do that around your children if you don't mind. So today we had an interesting story to talk about. We are going to talk about the Nicholas Barclay story. Also It's like Nicholas Barclay / Frederick Borden story. And so I'm going to have Megan give you guys a little introduction to what's going on with this case.
So this is one of my favorite crime stories just because it's so outrageous. So Nicholas Patrick Barclay was born on December 31st, 1980, to Beverly Dollarhide. And he was one of the youngest in his family, with an older sister named Carrie and an older brother named Jason. And the family, they lived in San Antonio, Texas, where Nicholas was unfortunately known as being a bit troubled.
So three tattoos at a very young age, self-made tattoos.
Well, we know he knows his alphabet because they're all like a tattoo of a T and a K, letter. So, you know, like he had it, his upbringing couldn't have been too bad.
We do have an uncle like that, so... Salt of the earth guy. So, so when the story kind of starts, Nicholas is actually in the middle of really a court case coming up. He's gotten in trouble for stealing at a convenience store, stealing some shoes, just kind of all around making some less than stellar decisions at this age. So he has been in arguments with his mom, but the next day he's supposed to go to, I guess, juvenile court, and they were going to decide if he was going to move into a group home. And he was ticked off about this, and I guess I don't blame him. If that's the only home you know, you don't want to be taken out of it, but it could have been a better situation than he had at home. So
That one's 50-50. So he got angry with his mom. She gave him $5. He went to go play basketball and he calls home and wants somebody to pick him up. And his brother, Jason, older brother, Jason, who was actually just recently moved back into the house, said, "I'm not waking mom up, just walk." And that was the last time anyone heard from Nicholas.
Can we instate that rule in our houses? Like, I'm not waking mom up.
Yeah.
How did that work?
How did somebody have enough, I don't know, intelligence to say mom will kill us all if we wake her up. Nobody cares at my house.
I'm going to teach my four-year-old that. Are you going to teach your four-year-old that
My four-year-old. Yeah, right. He like barges into the door in the middle of the night just
To wake you up.
Just to wake me up. Just to see what I'm doing, which good for him.
So we do have to say that Nicholas's mom, she did work the night shift. So I'm sure she was, to give her some credit, she was probably a little tired. And, you know, when you don't sleep as a mom, you might be a little crabby. So we'll give her a little bit of credit for that. So his brother, Jason, told him, just go ahead and find your own way home. And his mom she said it a few times that he was the kind of kid who would just take a ride from a stranger. So when he went disappearing, when he disappeared, they weren't so, sorry, words are hard. I have a newborn as well. So when he disappeared, his mom mentioned that she wouldn't be surprised if he had taken a ride from a stranger. That wasn't out of his character.
Yeah. It seems like there might not have been a ton of structure at home, based on what we read. And we actually watched the movie The Imposter. It's on Netflix and I think YouTube. And if you haven't seen it, it will both make and ruin your day. It's one of the most fascinating documentaries I've seen. And the interesting thing is, besides Nicholas, everyone else involved in this case is actually interviewed in it, which as we get further in the story, you'll wonder why people would even volunteer to be a part of this documentary.
So Nicholas was last seen June 13th. 1994 in San Antonio. He was 13 years old. However, his brother, Jason, claimed he saw him on September 25th, 1994, actually breaking into the family's garage. So the police came, but they didn't see Nicholas, and Jason said that Nicholas actually fled. So they searched the neighborhood, but actually the police didn't even believe that story at all. And the mom didn't believe it either. So it makes me wonder, why would he make up a story like that?
Yeah, you have to think there's more going on. And that's what they said. When people have something to hide, they'll bring up a clue that doesn't exist to kind of fit their narrative that he's still alive. So maybe he just wants to be on his own or do his own thing, which at 13 years old with $5, there's not a lot of things you can do. Although
he knows his alphabet.
He could do something. We're just not quite sure yet. But it's not like he came back and there was any evidence that he stole money from his mom, like he was doing anything to live this life. Because he had run away several times before for a day or two, but then he would always come back.
So in October of 1997, 3 years after Nicholas vanishes, the family in Texas receives a phone call stating that Nicholas just randomly appears in Spain.
Makes sense.
You know, just the other side of the world.
Hopping the border, you know, getting there with his $5.
It's easy to walk to.
Yeah. Across the ocean.
So the caller said that Nicholas was living at a Spanish shelter after escaping from a child sex ring operation. Mm-hmm. The man or the law enforcement officer said that the person believed that Nicholas had been abused for years.
Hmm. So plot twist, the person on the phone was not a police officer.
What?
Yeah. As we both know, the person on the phone was 23-year-old Frederick Borden. He was impersonating an officer. But before he was impersonating an officer, he was impersonating a 13-year-old boy named Nicholas Barclay. So before we go any further, we want to talk a little bit about this new member in our story, Frederick Borden. Frederick was born to a French woman and her lover, boyfriend, who was an Algerian immigrant. He grew up not knowing who his father was and said that he didn't receive much of his mother's attention. In the documentary, he talks about his grandfather, his mother's dad, being racist and so kind of being ashamed of his heritage and not understanding his heritage and kind of told to ignore it. So as he's growing up, he doesn't really know who he is, and then is also being told he was never wanted, his mom wanted to have an abortion, he shouldn't have been here. And so in the mind of a child hearing these kind of things, I can see how that could have an effect on you for the rest of your life, as apparently it did. So by the time he was 5, he was actually already impersonating a different life, putting on airs of being someone different. When people would ask why he didn't have a father, he would say that his dad was a British secret agent. So he started lying and becoming somebody he wanted to be from a very early age.
So he's been on the run since he was 16. You know, he kind of was in and out of juvenile homes, and he kind of explains that he never really received any love or any warmth growing up. So go back to Spain. And in Spain, one day there's some British tourists there, and they come across this boy. At least he looks like a boy, and he's just sitting there, and he isn't talking. And they're asking, "Hey, are you okay?" And this kid isn't responding, isn't right. doing anything. I mean, actually, this kid is 23-year-old Frederick. So these tourists, they decide to call the Spanish police.
Right.
And tell them, "Hey, we found this kid. We don't know what to do." And so they kind of just turn him over to the police there.
Right. So when Frederick gets to the police station, the police are asking him over and over again who he is, and he won't say anything. He continues to act scared, and he said he would kind of put his head down, and if they made any certain sudden movements, he would act scared like he had been somebody that had been abused, which is so
crazy.
Yeah, it's disgusting because there are people that have been through this, but he just learned to become an imposter in other people's lives. I use that word too much. My apologies. But at one point, the officers say, "You know what? If you're not going to tell us who you are, we're going to fingerprint you and take your picture." And Frederick realized that was the worst thing that could happen to him because he was actually a wanted man, not child, man. He's 23 years old at this point.
Yeah.
And so he decided he was either going to go to prison or he was going to be something else. He told them he was an American, that he ran away, and he wanted to contact his family right there, right now, by himself. And
now, the funny part about that is he's American with a very strong French accent.
Incredibly strong
French accent. Not only the French accent, but he's not even really good at speaking English.
No. Very broken English. But apparently, we found out later, he has tried this before. The first time he tried this same scenario and acted like he was a missing kid from America, he realized he didn't know enough English or any English and decided, "I should learn English and try this whole thing again," which the amount of planning that went into this, I just wish it could have been used for good.
Yeah.
He was very, very intelligent.
Was he like studying with Rosetta Stone at night? Like, what was going on?
I think he should have been Rosetta Stone's spokesperson.
Oh, yeah.
He could have made some legit money doing this. So he tells the police officers, I want to call my parents, yeah, and tell them what's happened to me, but I want to do it by myself. They'll be scared if they talk to you. So these officers, for reasons I'll never know, led him into this room where he has access to everything. So he gets this is 1997 at this point,
yeah.
So he's not on the internet or anything. He's pulling files and trying to find different numbers to places in the U.S. police departments. So he calls California. He calls New York and says, "Hey, we have a missing kid. Got anybody?" And they would say, like, "No, that's way too vague." And so finally they put him in touch with the Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And the lady that answers is trying to be so helpful, as one would be if you're working at that, right? And he says it's a teenager, you know, gives very few clues, nothing about what he looked like, which could have been helpful.
And remember, this is all like within one night.
Yeah.
He asked to be in a room by himself. I don't know what's going on in Spain, but he has to be in a room by himself overnight because he knew in the U.S. with the time difference.
Oh, yeah. That's
about an 8-hour difference that he would be able to contact someone in the U.S.
Exactly. And that's why it wasn't really manned, because he was waiting on this time change. So again, with the planning and the intelligence used for nothing good. So we finally asked the lady, "Okay, fax over a picture." She says, I think there's somebody in San Antonio, Texas that fits that description," which could not have been a very good description. Sends over the fax. He gets it and says, this is our boy. This is Nicholas Barclay.
He's got blonde hair, blue eyes. I have brown hair, brown eyes, but mm-mm. I think I can pull this one off.
I know. Well, I think the fax came through so dark.
Oh, that's right.
Remember, like, how faxes come in and you never send pictures? So he thought, like, it was enough that he would go for it. And it didn't, for whatever reason, even have the
hair. Yeah, it wasn't in color, and, right?
Yeah, so he couldn't see any of that. So he thinks, I'm going for it. So he decides that now he's Nicholas Barclay.
So at this point, Frederick is living in a shelter, and he decides he's going to contact Nicholas Barclay's family.
Sure.
Of course.
Yeah, that's the reasonable next step.
Yeah, he looks so much like him.
Not to decide maybe I should just be done with this whole thing. Let's just drag the knife in there a little bit more.
So he calls them, and he pretends to be someone else. He pretends to be Jonathan Duran, who was one of the Spanish police officers, who I'm not even sure exists. But he tells them, hey, we've got Nicholas. He's in Spain. He's been abused, but we found him.
Aren't you so happy he's here?
Yeah. And so they ask, of course, well, can we speak to him? Wouldn't you want to speak to your child?
Yeah.
And he's like, no, he's been through so much. And they're like, well, just a few words. So so Frederick now switches characters again, goes back to being Nicholas, and he whispers something like, I love you.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Which, based on the little we know about Nicholas, I wouldn't have guessed those would have been his first words to his sister. But they did show video in the beginning, and he seemed to really love his sister over anybody. He seemed to love her. So I can see that being a comforting thing for her.
And another thing to mention is Frederick's in the shelter, and it's actually where he wants to be. It's not like he doesn't want to be there and he's trying to get out. He likes the atmosphere of having a group, and he likes that he gets to be a kid again, and he gets to be cared for, which is kind of disturbing.
Yeah.
Very disturbing.
Just kind of.
So I think he just started just digging this hole, and it's like now people in the U.S. are contacting him.
Right.
To the extent where they send him a package with more information about Nicholas Barclay that has a colored photo. And when he sees the photo, he's like, yeah, I don't even want to say the words, but
yeah.
Wow, he's got yellow hair and blue eyes, and I definitely don't. So he decides, and he's got tattoos.
Yeah.
So, you know, like in every group home, there's a tattoo artist.
Sure, you gotta find that one.
Yeah, I mean, you know one. I know one. Whenever I need a tea on my finger,
when I need a quick tea, I know where to go. Yeah.
So he decides he's gonna dye his hair blonde because, of course, now the family's interested in coming over to Spain.
They're on their way.
Yeah.
At this point, they're on their way.
The sister's on the way. And so he decides to dye his hair blonde. And not much he can do about his eyes.
Yeah. But or his 5 o'clock shadow, really.
Yeah. I mean, he does have a full beard. And he gets some, you know, group home tats.
Yeah. Like we've all been there. We've all done this. So, yeah. So he gets those done. And one thing I thought was kind of interesting is the sister is who came over and not the mom. And they made it sound like she wasn't prepared to do this. But as a mom, if you tell me my son's in Spain, you're going to have to keep me from, like, running to Spain. There's nothing that's going to stop me. So that's kind of, as we go further in this case, something that kind of stood out to me as being, like, maybe there was something there that she knew.
I'm going to say, I don't think the mom knew exactly where Spain was. She happened to mention on the other side of the country. I'm not sure what country she was talking about.
Yeah.
So.
It's sunny and beautiful outside, which means I want to be out there. And while I can't just leave the house to vacay at a moment's notice, I sure can pretend. Welcome to the fabulous universe of June Parker's escapades in June's journey. Forget about packing your bags. We're taking you on a roller coaster without a passport. Say goodbye to the mundane and get ready to dive into a whirlwind of drama and elegance with our leading lady, June Parker.
Whether you're itching for a juicy mystery or just desperate for a break from the daily grind, June's journey is your ticket to excitement. Follow June as she unravels family secrets and tiptoes through the tangled mess of her sister's demise. It's like crashing a fancy party, minus the small talk about the weather. Although, we secretly love that too.
So dust off your virtual flapper dress and buckle up for a wild ride where every corner holds a clue and every twist keeps you on the edge of your seat. But hold on to your pearls. June's journey isn't your average mobile game. I'm knee-deep in the fifth chapter, and trust me, it's more fun than a barrel of monkeys. With stunning scenery and catchy tunes, this game oozes sophistication and class. Don't waste another second. Jump into June's world and let the adventure begin.
Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Are you ready to revolutionize the way you enjoy food and essentials at home? Introducing Dash Pass from DoorDash, your ultimate ticket to convenience and savings. With Dash Pass, you gain exclusive access to unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders, along with members-only deals and discounts that will leave your wallet smiling. Whether you're craving the flavors of your favorite restaurants, need groceries from across town, or anything in between, Dash Pass ensures that everything you need is just a few clicks away, delivered right to your door. With Dash Pass, not only do you enjoy $0 delivery fees, but you'll also benefit from lower service fees on eligible orders, making it the most affordable way to satisfy your cravings and stock up on essentials from your local favorites. What I really love is how quickly Dash Pass pays for itself. On average, it takes just 2 orders, which makes it a no-brainer investment for your budget. And as if that weren't enough, Dash Pass grants you special access to exclusive promotions and menu items, adding an extra layer of excitement to your DoorDash experience. You get all this for only $9.99 a month, which is a small price to pay for unlimited convenience and savings. My family and I have had DoorDash for the past year or so, and while I make most meals at home, I don't know that I could mom without it. I used it twice just this past week while we were dealing with a stomach bug at home, and it was so nice to have and to be able to focus on getting better and not running all over town to pick everything up for everyone. Don't wait. Sign up for Dash Pass now and unlock a world of possibilities, all from the comfort of your home. Dash Pass from DoorDash, delivering joy, convenience, and savings straight to your doorstep.
Get more from delivery for less with Dash Pass. $0 delivery fees and reduced service fees on eligible DoorDash orders. Sign up for Dash Pass today and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change. Terms apply. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for Dash Pass today, only on DoorDash, and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
So Nicholas's sister, Carrie, is on her way, and she's never left the country. She's never flown. And so this is a new experience for her. She has no idea what to expect. She's going to see her brother, who they probably thought had been dead most likely for 3 years, in a country she had never been to. And we enjoyed in the documentary, one of Megan's favorite part was when she was making observations.
Yeah, she had 2 great observations.
Right.
The first was, you know, she was just so happy that you could smoke there.
Sure.
You know,
nobody like, burns your cigarettes when you get
yeah,
there.
Yeah, you just get off the plane. Who knows? She might have been smoking in the plane.
Yeah.
I don't even know what's going on in Spain at this time. So
this was pre-September 11th, so you could have gotten away with a lot.
So she was just so happy about that. And, you know, the fact that there was Coca-Cola. I mean,
you know,
I always thought Coke was only in the U.S., but apparently it's all over the world.
Yeah, that Carrie.
I don't know about Pepsi, but yeah. Coke is definitely there.
I don't care where Pepsi is. I just want Coke. Thank you.
So she arrives in Spain, and she sees her brother, and it says that, you know, he says, this woman he had never seen before. He doesn't even know. She just gave him the biggest hug.
Right.
And he mentions in the documentary that he's not much of a hugger. He grew up without much love.
Right.
So he's also thinking she knows that I'm not her brother. Like, that's going through his head. And
if she had eyes, she would know that was not his brother. But,
yeah.
You know.
At this point, he's wearing a hat and glasses, and he's, you know, you'll see, if you see pictures of him, he's got a scarf wrapped around his face, which is very suspicious.
He looked a little more like he had tuberculosis getting off of the plane than anything else.
It
was very shady. Gloves, everybody else. It's San Antonio. This is not, it's not freezing at the point they're coming home. It's, so he's covered head to toe and covering up the 5 o'clock shadow. But he, I don't know, it just seemed like a little bit much to not question.
But what I found interesting is while they were in Spain, when she was meeting him for the first time, she brought all of these photos with her.
Right.
And she's kind of going through these photos and saying, hey, look, this is mom. This is, you know, Uncle Jerry. I don't remember his name. But she's kind of going through and telling him who people are.
Yeah.
And as she's saying that, he's kind of like memorizing these people. So before he could actually leave Spain, because he has to meet with one of the, I think the ambassador or something.
Right. To get a passport.
To get a passport.
To be able to leave. Yeah.
It's amazing he even fooled them. But he kind of has to go through, I think, 5 photos and tell who each person is.
Right.
And he's able to do it on four of them. On the fifth one, he messes up. But, yeah. You know, he kind of blames it on he's been traumatized.
Yeah. Anybody would believe that. And things change. If these aren't recent pictures even, then it's not crazy to think you wouldn't know what somebody looks like, or they've changed. He's clearly changed, so why wouldn't somebody else have changed?
He kind of mentions, though, that he kind of felt like his sister Carrie was kind of prepping him and feeding him like answers.
Yeah, saying like, you remember this was our old house. Yeah. Remember when we lived here with mom and we lived here with this person? You remember my daughter.
Yeah.
He kept saying over and over again, you remember, you remember,
exactly.
You remember. And he would say things like that he loved the grandma and the grandpa was a jerk, like kind of things he kind of came up with on his own, but ended up being accurate, but also accurate of a lot of families.
I love it. He states, is grandpa still a jerk?
Yeah.
Like, don't we all say that?
Yeah. Most of us have had at least one grandfather that's a jerk.
So they arrive in San Antonio. They get off the plane, and everyone's there to greet them, and they're so excited.
Right.
If you watch footage of this, everyone's going and hugging him. And he's kind of just standing there. His face is covered up. His mom, you see that she's not showing a lot of emotion.
Right.
She kind of just goes up to him. But nobody's saying, this isn't Nicholas.
Yeah, no one's stating the obvious at all.
Yeah, they're just kind of like accepting that this 23-year-old man with brown eyes and a French accent is here, and Nicholas is home.
But you've got to kind of think like, there's no way they could get this wrong. You know what I mean? Even all your questions, you think, well, the embassy got it right, and
That's true.
Police got it right, and everybody else. So who am I to think, because of all this trauma, he couldn't have morphed into a 23-year-old man? So when Frederick arrives, he's expecting the states to be like you would see in movies, like Home Alone 2 and the New York and
Coca-Cola everywhere.
Don't forget the Coca-Cola everywhere. And he arrives in San Antonio and to where they live and realized, maybe the shelter would have been a better life.
We'll call it small town.
We'll call it small town USA / couple people on heroin, some people on meth. Few of those as your family
Small
members.
Town USA.
Otherwise known as Small Town USA. So one thing I found to be super eerie is, you know, he says, I didn't know if Nicholas was right-handed or left-handed. And so he's looking at pictures of Nicholas to try and become him. And one thing that bothered me so much is he sees this picture of Nicholas and his hands are kind of, he has three fingers kind of saying hi, almost like he's got his hands ready to throw a baseball. So every time he would say hi to somebody, he would do that. So he would find these little details. And so if somebody looked at it, they would think, oh, that's, he used to do that.
Yeah.
And what crazy person would try and come up with this? So
Frederick did a really good job of integrating into San Antonio. He started making friends. He started going to school.
Right.
He rode the yellow school bus, which he loved. He thought he was living the dream.
There are no tall buildings, but there sure is a yellow school bus.
Oh, yeah. I mean, didn't we all love that school bus?
There
no seatbelts.
No seatbelts.
Still don't get that to this day.
Yeah. Who needs a seatbelt with that many children on a bus?
I mean, not necessary at all. And he even had a girl in the neighborhood that he liked. And I don't know. They never mentioned her liking him back, but...
Yeah, but
there
he's
was a possibility.
23.
they said that they would spend, time talking on the phone. But, he's fooled so many people at this point.
Yeah.
Even the school.
Yeah.
I mean, this has only been 3 years. You change in 3 years, but not to that extent. So
right.
I'm just wondering, what were the other kids? I mean, these had to be former classmates. What were they thinking, too?
Yeah.
What is going on? I mean, I've bashed Spain a bit, but San Antonio, come on.
Yeah. Get it together, San Antonio. So the one person that he hadn't really seen was his brother, Jason. And so Jason finally comes over for a visit, looks at Nicholas, doesn't really pay him any attention, and says, good luck to you, and leaves. So he's the only person in this entire story that seems to get like, this is not the same guy you guys are acting like. And so he really had nothing to do with it. And as they talked in the documentary and some stuff I read, during the time that Nicholas was originally missing, the mom and Jason were fighting constantly. The police were called. They were yelling about his disappearance. And of course, the tensions are going to be super high because of obviously the loss of your child, you don't know where your child is, but it seemed like there could have been something more. And as it goes along, you get even a stronger feeling about that.
So the FBI contact the Barclay family, and actually they were supposed to contact the FBI when they arrived in the U.S. just so they could do an interview right. with them. But some time went by, they never did. So the FBI reached out to them, and so they do this interview with Nicholas, just saying like, "So what happened? Like, right. we want to find the people who did this to you.
Yeah.
And they actually don't even really know the story. So the story he tells them is, of course, insane because yeah. he's straight up madman. you know, like there's so many pieces to the story. I'll just go over it quickly. He tells them that that military men put him in a van and they flew him all over the world. He never knew where he was. He was kept in a room with different kids.
Right.
He woke up in different places, that he was, you know, of course, he was sexually abused. They broke his hands. They experimented on him with needles. They changed his eye color. So that's, you know, that's how he went from blue to brown.
Yeah. You've all heard of that, where somebody injects something in your eyes and changes the colors.
Of course.
Couldn't they have just given him like the contact, like cat eyes or something to change it? I don't really quite get where they're going with that.
Yeah. And he was trying to explain his accent. And, you know, he mentioned that if he spoke English, that he was beaten.
Right.
So that's why he had this thick accent.
Which still makes no sense.
Yeah, of course.
Other people that interviewed him that said in the first 6 or 7 years of life, the dialect, the accents you hear, it's kind of what develops your speaking, your communication. So having this gap of 3 years somewhere, if you know somebody that's moved to another country, yeah. they don't come back talking like they're from another
yeah.
country. They still keep their original accent.
So the FBI was just like eating this story up
yeah.
and just to bash someone else. Come on, FBI. Yeah.
There's a lot of people to blame in this story.
I'm going to have a list of people I'm yeah. just going to question everything about. So, yeah, they finished the interview. And at this point, nobody was suspicious.
No.
Not even the FBI. So mm-hmm. he's fooled the FBI and the family at this point, among other people. And now he's free to continue riding that big yellow school bus.
Ride the big yellow bus
to the
dream. Sky. So at this point, news is getting around across the U.S. that there's this boy who's been missing, captured in Spain. All these terrible things have happened to him. In the show Hard Copy, which you remember Hard Copy
oh, yeah,
a
I
little.
Grew up on that.
Yeah, that was another show we probably shouldn't have watched, and we did. They sent a private investigator named Charlie Parker, who is one of my favorite characters in anything ever, to find out where he was to talk to him. The FBI had told the family, do not talk to the media. Like, all this information you're giving us about the military men, all that stuff, we need to keep that to ourselves. So as we are looking for these people, we have stuff to question them on. But Frederick, decided to make this story look more believable. He was going to talk to the press.
Can I stop you there? Can you
please
just describe Charlie Parker? Just so people have an idea of the person.
First word, suspenders, right?
Of course.
The suspenders. He's an older gentleman. Mm-hmm. I don't know even if words can describe Charlie Parker. He has a Twitter page. Please find his Twitter page. It's full of gems. Like,
it kind of looks like he's a mix of a used car salesman
sure.
slash running a funeral home.
Yeah, that's
Does that
a
give
good,
you a good
yeah.
visual?
Honestly, I think that could be a side business.
Yeah, lots of gold rings.
Yeah.
Always driving, you know, a car made in the 70s with the windows down and the San
well,
Antonio
that's because there's
beat.
No AC.
But his hair is slicked back.
He looks good. He looks good.
Yeah.
He looks good. So he becomes super interested in this case. And Charlie Parker, during one of Frederick's interviews, looks at him, and in the background sees an old picture of Nicholas. And he decides to do what, Megan, which is my favorite part of the whole case.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at the ears. Don't you know that's like the first what you learn when you're investigating someone. Just check out someone's ears.
PI 101.
But we have to say, I mean, he's the only one.
He's the only one that
figured this out. So what he does is he looks at the picture and he looks at Nicholas's ears, and then he looks at Frederick's ears and realizes that they're different.
By putting them in Adobe Photoshop and comparing
them. I'm just amazed that he can do that.
At this point, I think we could have figured this case out if all it took was Photoshop and two pictures.
So he's like Photoshopping. I don't know what exactly he's doing, but he has cracked the case with Photoshop.
He did. Photoshop for the win. So Charlie Parker is on the case. He's thinking something's not right here. And if by goodness, you can't tell from the ears, what do you have? So the information that Frederick had given the FBI was really vague. So they said that he needed to go to Houston to deal with this trauma and speak to a doctor. And this was all part of the FBI's mm-hmm. plan of getting more information. The doctor he spoke to, who was also on the documentary, said, yeah, there's no way that this kid is related to you. He has an accent. He's not American. He can't be related to you. So the FBI director calls Kerry Gibson, and they're about to be back going to Houston. So the FBI director is with Frederick, and they're going back to Houston. I'm sorry, they're going back to San Antonio. And she tells Kerry, hey, this isn't your brother. We don't know who this is. Don't bring him back to your house. We're just going to take care of everything when we get there. So they go down the escalator at the airport, arriving back in San Antonio, and who is there but smiley Kerry, ready to open him, you know, open arms to this madman. And all you can think is like, what is happening?
And
it's
at that point, I think, that Frederick was like, something is really suspicious here. Like there's no way they could believe my story, but they've just been told that I'm not even an American.
Nope.
And I'm going back home.
He's got to be scared to go to their house at this point.
If I were him, I'd be like, let's go back to sunny San Antonio.
How he didn't stop right there and say, my name is Frederick Borden. Let me tell you my crimes is incredible. But on the documentary, she says, I don't remember that being the way they told me.
Oh, I think that would be pretty clear if they're like, this isn't your brother.
Yeah. If they started with, this isn't your brother, don't bring him home.
Those are hard words to understand, though.
But if they had tattoos on their arms, maybe they would have understood.
Maybe. We'll see. So at this point, they decide they're going to do a DNA test, which they should have done before he left.
Yeah.
In the land of Coca-Cola. So they ask the mom, and she refuses to do a DNA test because they say, well, we know who it is.
Right.
Of course, it's a 23-year-old Frenchman. So she actually lays on the floor screaming because she doesn't want to do this test.
My son's done that.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to do something. He's
of course.
Four. It makes sense.
I mean, it does work. Does it work in your house?
It works. I can break down very easily.
Yeah, if you scream loud enough, you get whatever.
If there are witnesses, we're out of here.
You get to ride the school bus.
You get to have
Coca-Cola, whatever you want.
You can have Coca-Cola on the school bus for all I care at that point.
So she basically says that she doesn't want to go with the FBI. They know who he is. And at this point, the FBI director is realizing that they're not really a victimized family, but they've got something to hide. And we kind of believe that she didn't want to do this DNA test because she did have a history of using heroin, as well as her son, Jason.
Yeah.
So we're thinking she might have had heroin in her system, and she just didn't want them to find out. And who knows, that might be why she also accepted having, you know, Frederick in the house.
Yeah.
Who knows what was going on. It seemed like a very dysfunctional family, obviously.
What? No.
Yeah. Sorry to break it to you guys.
You haven't figured that at this point into our podcast.
Yeah.
You're never going to figure it out.
Their white picket fence has been chopped down with an axe.
Yeah. And set on fire and tattooed. So. Yeah.
So they finally get some blood work from Frederick. They send it over to Spain, and Spain tells them, you know, hey, actually, we have a match.
Right.
And it's definitely not Nicholas Barclay. It's Frederick. And so they fax all the information over. And I think at this point, Frederick's realizing, I'm in a house with crazy people. And I'm about to be found out.
He may have been the one faxing the information to the police just to get out of this house.
So he's very suspicious and just wondering what is going on. He's being like duped by the people he's duped.
Yeah. It's a big cycle over there. And we're back to our friend Charlie Parker, PI. He sits down with Frederick. And so Frederick knows, like, this is almost over. And he says to Frederick, your mom is crazy. And he said, you know, that's not my mom. Like, you know, I know. Can you please get me out of here?
Help me.
Yeah. He tattooed help me across his arm, and nobody was there to help. So with all the information that Spain has, they tell the police in San Antonio, yeah, he's wanted by Interpol, and he has impersonated, according to him, over 500 people, including 3 missing children.
Do you even know 500 people?
No. How do you remember? Like, I could play pretend with my kids, and they can give me a name, and I'm going to forget halfway through what the name is.
Yeah, I just don't play pretend.
Well, good for you. If you can get away with not doing that, that's kudos to you. But I can't, I don't have that kind of a memory. And so figure he's playing people in different countries.
With different accents.
Well, he's terrible at that part.
Different languages.
He learned, I think, 5 languages to do this. But he kept saying, like, throughout the documentary, like, I never really wanted to do this. But then you got to think, well, you got on a plane. You ruined this family, who was kind of already ruined. But, like, you had steps all the way along to say, JK, I'm done with this.
It was to the point where when he realized he might be murdered, that he was like, I'm out.
Yeah, like, well, this was fun.
Yeah, this wasn't the right family.
I got another person I need to be.
We've all seen the headlines in the news of how someone lost their life in an act of cold-blooded murder. And while it's sad and grabs your attention, most people go on with their day without giving it another thought. But have you ever stopped to think about the life of the person at the center of the news story? They were more than just a headline or a statistic. They were someone's loved one or friend. I'm Mike Morford, and my podcast, The Murder of My Family, dives into some of those stories to help listeners get to know the person who was lost and how their death affected those closest to them. Listen to The Murder of My Family everywhere you listen to podcasts. There are well over 100 episodes to binge on now. There are over 90,000 people missing at any time, and over 500,000 are reported missing every year. And that's just in the United States. I'm Mike Morford.
And I'm Jess Betancourt. And in our podcast, Missing Persons, we discuss cases of people who have gone missing under mysterious circumstances. And we're joined in each episode by guests who are either related to the missing person, investigating their disappearance, or advocating for answers in the case.
Missing Persons is available everywhere you listen to podcasts, and there are dozens of episodes to binge on right now. Subscribe today so you don't miss an episode.
So good old Charlie Parker, he kind of cracks the case in the sense that he figures out that Frederick is not Nicholas.
Right.
So he cracks that case, but we never figure out actually what happens to Nicholas. But there is a pretty cool scene in The Imposter where you see Charlie with a man without a shirt.
Right. He goes to their old house that they lived in. The man opens the door, could not be happier to see a camera crew there, ready to show him all about his house. Tells the story of how his dog used to dig up in this corner. And Charlie's theory is that the brother killed him and buried him in the backyard. So they're going to take shovels. And my heart went out to Charlie. He takes this shovel, and all I can think is the production team has no money to hire somebody to shovel in this yard. But then they cut to like an aerial shot of the poor homeowner shirtless, basically digging a grave. And Charlie Parker just standing there with his shovel, just, you know, cheering the guy on. He had to have dug like 30 feet and nothing was there. So I'm not really sure what that guy's MO was, but he could have been pals with good old Freddy for all we know.
Oh yeah. So Frederick is found out finally. I think he has to be a little bit relieved. He's accused of perjury and falsely getting a passport, and he's sentenced to 6 years in U.S. prison. After that, he gets deported to France in October of 2003, where he's there for a bit of time in prison, where he continues to make phone calls.
Impressive.
Why does this man have a phone?
It was in his cell. He was making collect calls.
They actually
have
it on film, right?
Yeah.
Him making calls.
And dancing to Michael Jackson, which was difficult to watch.
If you only watch one thing in this documentary, The Imposter, just watch the very end. You will laugh and cry at the same time.
Also, the guy could have had some kind of role in dancing. Could have been a J-Lo backup dancer. Could have done something.
That's what I'm thinking.
Could have had a different life.
He chose the wrong career here. So he's in 2005, he gets out. He gets a cat, you know? Everybody needs a cat.
Right. And he decides with this cat, he was interviewed in 2005 and they said, are you going to still impersonate people? And he said, no, I have this cat. The cat needs me. I could never leave this cat. Why did no one get this man a pet before this? Think of all the lives that could have been changed had this man just had like a dog lick his hand every day.
Oh, yeah.
Like, none of this had to have happened. He could have had a flipping fish for all I care, but something. He needed something in his life. But he does actually get married and has five kids. And
it's not the five kids that changed his life. It's the cat.
Yeah, it's the flipping cat. The cat changed everything. So he has these kids, but he says, you know, I have love in my life now, so I don't need to look for something else. So your heart kind of breaks for him, but at the same time, you know he's manipulating people all along. So is he just manipulating people to say, feel bad for me because of what I've went through? You don't really know. But the sad part of the story is we still don't know what happened to Nicholas Barclay.
And I just have to say, Frederick, if you're listening, we did
turn it off.
We did find your Facebook page, but please do not impersonate us.
No, please don't impersonate us. We thought of asking him a question, but he seems to respond. I don't want to be involved in that.
He responds within an hour.
Within an hour.
So we're not doing that.
He should have his own life. We'll have our own life. We'll just talk about
him. But if any of
him.
You decide to, just let us know how it goes.
Yeah, and also make sure you, like, I don't know, hide your social security cards. Make sure
hide
you
your
tell
kids,
friends.
Hide your wife.
Hide your kids, hide your wife. Do all the things that we normally do when contacting people who could impersonate us. So he actually had a job for a while as a phone telemarketer.
Oh,
which,
really?
Genius. Like, that's what you should have done the whole time, man. You could have done made some really good money.
Right.
So now our favorite part of our episodes is when we're going to talk about theories. Megan, what do you think happened to poor Nicholas?
I think that definitely his brother, something happened
Jason,
with his
right?
brother, Jason.
Yeah.
And I think his mom knew.
Yeah.
I don't know if he murdered her or murdered him or what happened exactly. And we know that they were the mother and then Jason were both on drugs at that time.
Right.
It was a rough household. The police were always being called. So it could have been an accident. Who knows what happened? But I think they definitely know what happened to him.
Yeah. I feel less likely that Carrie knew anything. Not 100% sure, but I feel like something may have happened with Jason, maybe accidentally, because it just seemed like a volatile house and something happened and the mom didn't know what to do and she helped cover it up. And but Jason actually died while Frederick was going to prison, I think. He died of an overdose. So
they actually never got a chance to really to talk to him about it. He died before they were able to interview him.
Yeah. I think he was in a rehab center whenever he came back or something. So he was just freshly off drugs, got back on. And the mom doesn't know. She said there's a possibility he killed himself, like with drugs. So there's just no happy ending in this story.
Yeah, it was like right before he was going to be brought in, he mysteriously died. They say it was drug overdose. So actually that's something else to look into if you want to go down the rabbit hole. If this
Charlie Parker needs to get back on this story.
I know.
But he seems very committed to figuring out what happened. But with the brother Jason dead and no real clues, you have to wonder if it's ever going to come up. But I really enjoyed the story and it was fascinating to me, and I feel the same way as you about the brother Jason probably being the most likely suspect.
I did like the sister. She says, you know, if we knew what happened, why would we allow, you know, Frederick to come into our home and create, you know, all of this media attention when nobody was bringing this up at all. Like
right.
The family wasn't even on the radar at all. So if, she's like, from my experience, if I knew that we were suspects, why in the world would we do that? And so that makes me think she might not have known what was going on. I don't know why she acted the way she did.
Yeah. But after the FBI call, that's where I lose it with her and think like, well, maybe you did know something because then you're...
Well, she also seemed a lot older than her brother. So maybe, you know, she didn't grow up in the house with him.
True.
Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, but still, I feel like you would recognize your own brother.
Yeah, there's a lot. A lot of things. But if you're ever in doubt who somebody is, just check their ears. Compare it to a photo.
Photoshop.
Contact Charlie Parker,
use
PI.
Paint.
Yeah. Use paint before it goes out.
Yeah, right?
It's almost done. So thank you so much for joining me today, Megan. I hope you had fun.
Yeah.
I loved having you. And I hope you guys have a great week. Make sure you contact us with your I'm Invincible Win stories. We had a good one this week from Megan L. And hers was, I'm invincible when I pretend to talk on my cell phone in the parking lot on the way to my car at night. That the would-be murder rapist is going to change their mind about me because I'm on the phone. Duh. I've been there.
Yeah,
of course. Grab your phone. You're not popular enough to have anybody to actually talk to you at that time of night, but you act like it just, I guess.
It's like if I don't make eye contact, they don't see me.
Right. Well, I think the opposite of approach. I always want to say hi to somebody to be like, hey, I see you, you see me, now you can't kill me. So far, I'm running at 100% with that. No one's killed me. So I'm going to keep going with that one. Do you have any good I'm Invincible When stories?
I definitely don't. I'm definitely not. I've never been murdered.
Congratulations.
But, I've been robbed 4 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Megan has not had really good. Megan has a very robbable face is
I
what
do.
We're guessing.
I was robbed twice in one day. maybe my I'm Invincible When is one time when I was robbed the second time in the same day, I happened to tell the person robbing me, hey, this guy just robbed me.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, cool. We won't really do anything here. So my invincible win would just be like, hey, I just got robbed 5 minutes ago.
There you go.
Yeah, that's the only thing that seemed to work for me.
I would like to clarify that you did work at a bank for a while and then you were maybe somewhere else. During this other time.
Lived in another country.
Yeah.
Rhymes with Matamala.
No. We love the country of Matamala. Yeah. It was just a bad day.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I'm very glad you're here and you haven't been murdered and that you've only been robbed 4 times. It seems to be pretty good with your track record and that robbable face you've got.
Exactly.
Thank you guys for joining us and we will see you next week.
Hello, fellow skin suits. This is Angel and Ember. Deep down, do you have a secret passion for true crime, sarcasm, inappropriate jokes, but you still want to hear all those lovely details?
However, you still need a little bit of humor to get you through those dark moments?
Then come hang out with us over at the Color Me Dead podcast.
We try to balance both humor and facts perfectly.
We also go on some pretty extraordinary squirrel hunts.
We can be found on iTunes and all other podcast apps.
Come over to Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram and see us at Color Me Dead Podcast for the latest updates and gory chat. We release on Wednesdays because on Wednesdays we wear murder.
Don't forget to spay and neuter your pets
and stay out of chalk lines.
Well, hello, my friends. I am CK and I'm the host of a new and amusing podcast called Mirths and Monsters. Ever wondered about the cry of the haggis?
How kindly no.
Or wondered if a man and his canine companion, say hello, Finn, could travel back in time to watch a celebrity death match between St. George and the Dragon? Wonder no more. All these are answered, and more, on Mirths and Monsters. Available on iTunes, Podbean, and SoundCloud. Catch me on Twitter, at Mirths and Monsters, or mirthsandmonsterspod@gmail.com. Till next time, slantcha. Your health.
Thanks so much for listening to the Moms and Murder podcast. Make sure to check back with us next week for a new episode. You can also find us at momsandmurder.com, where you can connect with us via social media. Please make sure you subscribe and give us 5 stars, because giving us 4 stars would be a crime. Thanks so much.